Welcome to The Jury Is Out, a podcast for trial attorneys who want to sharpen their skills and better serve their clients. Your co-hosts are John Simon, founder of the Simon Law Firm, Tim Cronin, personal injury trial attorney at the Simon Law Firm, and St. Louis attorney Eric Veith.
Welcome to another episode of The Jury Is Out. I'm Eric Veith.
I'm Mary Simon.
I'm John Simon.
Today's episode will feature mentorship. There's a lot of aspects of this. We've all been both mentored by people we treasure, and we have all served as mentors. So we're going to start this off by talking about the general importance of mentorship and let it go from there. Mary, you suggested this topic, and we all thought this is a good one. What are your initial thoughts?
It's always fun having an opportunity to talk about the importance of mentorship when I get to do it with my dad, who is probably the most influential mentor professionally in my life. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say my mom was pretty much up there in terms of life mentorship. She might take the cake for
Oh, she's a pretty good mentor professionally, too, yes. As she has been for me over the years. I know that.
That's exactly right.
When I talked to her about a case and she like rips it up, yes, and I'm like, right. Well, guess I'll start over.
That's the most important type of mentorship you can ask for. So
no, I'm not joking at all. I'll start talking to her about the case that she doesn't want to hear about. And then when I finally get her attention and she starts listening to the facts, she hones in almost immediately, like instinctively, on the two or three worst things in my case and starts asking me multiple questions about what about this and that and when did this happen? Why didn't you know? And I'm like, well, that's not the point, you know?
And my favorite feedback that my mom will give both of us is, I don't know why you guys have to make this so complicated as we're trying to prepare down. Right. That's perhaps the most important type of mentorship is complete and utter honesty as you continue to move through your cases. So obviously for my dad and I both, Margie Simon is number one mentor for both of us. And I
both personally and professionally.
That's exactly right. It's important to talk about mentorship because I have been so privileged with the opportunity to have my mentor also kind of built in to my, you know, everyday life. And I never really learned that much about what it means to have a mentor until I started hearing people talk about it in law school because I already had one, right? So I didn't have to go seek out an attorney to be my, you know, so-called mentor. But the more that I learn about it, the more I learn of how important it is. And so I thought today it would be, you know, timely and relevant to have a discussion about what it means to have a mentor and the importance of it. So with that, I was kind of curious, when did you learn, having an attorney in your family, when did you learn about what a mentor was? Did you just get one?
You know, I didn't get one. I guess the first 4 or 5 years or so, I was always sort of independent-minded and, you know, I'd be that person that I'm going to figure this out on my own and, you know, didn't seek out help and it was really a mistake. And it wasn't until I actually went to the second firm I was with. I changed firms and started doing plaintiff stuff. And I went from a really big firm with over 100 lawyers to one that had 12. And they did a lot of litigation, a lot of trial work. You know, I tried a lot of cases. And in that firm, you know, the first job I had, like most new lawyers, I was like second and third lawyer on the case. And I'd watch more depositions or motions than I was actually doing or, you know, handling myself. And then the next firm I was kind of thrown into, here are the cases and here are the trial settings. And I really, you know, reached out of necessity. I was like freaking out going, whoa, what the heck is, you know, and I would talk to the other lawyers. And then, you know, I learned so much, not just from talking to them, but watching them. It was an environment where everybody was helping each other out. It's a small firm. Everybody was always in trial. When somebody was in trial, everybody dropped everything and helped them out, kind of like the environment here. It wasn't a situation where I said, oh, I need a mentor. I'm going to seek out a mentor. Would you be my mentor? A formal kind of thing. It just, there were certain people who I would go to, and I really went to them because they knew what they were doing. They were real smart. They were good at it. But they also didn't mind me being there asking them. They liked, you know, actually showing me and teaching me what I needed. Now, everybody that I've worked with over the years, you know, everybody doesn't fit that profile. You know, I've learned that, you know, the people who are genuinely good mentors, who actually want to take the time to teach you stuff, those are few. Most of the time, you know, everybody's busy. Some people flat out don't want to talk to you about anything. Other people, you know, want to do that, but they're too busy. So if you can find somebody who actually is willing to take the time to explain things to you and show you how things need to be done or talk to you about issues in your case, man, that is just gold.
Someone who actually wants you to succeed.
We have 10 or 12 law clerks at any given time here at the firm. We, you know, I teach at the law school, and so I'm involved with a lot of, you know, law students, very young lawyers. I'll get asked to write a letter of recommendation or give them some ideas in terms of the job search. And I always give this advice, and I'm sure it's rarely taken, and that is, if I had to do it all over again, I would not go to the firm or accept the job that pays me the most money. I would look for the place where it was most likely that the people there were going to take the time to show me and teach me. And I say that. I say, find a place, even if they found a firm, they interviewed, they gave an offer, and they'll be talking to me about it. And I'll say, who are the people there? The person that you're going to be working under directly, what kind of person is that? Do you like them? Do you get along with them? I would advise any young lawyer in a job search, whether it's their first job or their third job or second job, you know, go take a job with the place where you're going to learn the most, the quickest, where they're going to let you do things, where you have people that you can actually work with and ask questions. Because if you are just cogging the machine, you know, you're just not going to learn anything.
Yeah. And it almost sounds like there's a couple different places that folks are getting mentors from. And one is, you know, structurally there are systems in place that you can get one, whether it's you're at a law school that has an adjunct to also, you know, happens to be a practicing attorney, which is also, you know, it's excellent that way. And also, it sounds like what you're saying, Dad, is whenever you're going to look at a job and you have your growth, your personal growth and your career and where you're going to be able to do that is where you are going to go to a place that has good mentors. And it almost sounds like what you're saying is when you're looking for a job and you're getting interviewed, you need to be doing a little bit of the interviewing yourself.
And not just somebody that's going to take the time to explain something to you, but you need to be at a firm too that you're actually going to get to do things. Most of the time, I think, you know, the highest salaries, you know, the biggest pay, the highest pay, are at the bigger firms, and those are firms where, you know, your track in terms of what you're able to do is a lot slower. You might not be taking depositions in the first year or two. You know, you're not being given the ability to, you know, do things that you would at a smaller firm. Now, the smaller firms might not pay as much, but I think it's just really a matter of what you're learning. That's the most important thing. Now, let me just say this. If I had somebody who I knew and trusted, and they gave me that advice when I was getting out of law school, I wouldn't have followed it.
Right.
All right. I would have said, wait a minute, this job pays $8,000 more. Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah.
You know, got the loans to pay off and right. Everything else. I get that. I understand that. But, you know, it might not be your first job. Maybe, you know, who knows. But
you know what? But you know what's significant about that is it from a mentor perspective is you can always advise or get advice from a mentor that's telling you, I understand the circumstance that you're in right now. This could be the most feasible or, you know, correct place for you to be in for now, but don't let it be where you, you know, plant yourself for the next 20 years. It's okay to do that now, but come see me in 2 years when you're in a little bit of a better position to.
So I give everybody another, I don't know, tip or advice. I mean, it helped me. You know, the first job I had, it was a good, great firm, good people there. I just didn't like it. It wasn't a good fit for me. I spent 4.5 years there. And part of it was I just wasn't being given an opportunity to do much. I didn't think I was being challenged. I was kind of doing the same things over and over. A lot of research, reviewing documents, getting paid very, very well. And, you know, I was not real thrilled to be there. You know, I was just kind of not looking forward to going to work some days. And what happened is one day driving to work, I just told myself, absolutely, this is not going to be, you know, permanent. You know, you're either the position there.
This isn't my forever.
Right, this isn't my forever. Exactly. And, you know, once I made, you know, told myself that and convinced myself of that, that you're either going to be doing something different here that's, you know, a little more likable, or you're going to be doing it somewhere else. And as soon as I made that decision, and as you say, Mary, that it's not a forever, I kind of liked it a lot
sure.
more, you know. It was more, you know, knowing that it's not permanent. You know, I'd look around and I'd say, okay, you're doing this because you're a second-year lawyer. You know, I'd look at somebody who'd been there 8 or 10 years, and obviously they're doing something a little bit more challenging. You know, you always need to be trying to improve yourself. And any who wants to work in an environment where, you know, you're not really engaging with the people you work with, right? I mean, isn't that the part of going to work and part of the experience? I'd rather be at a place where the work is 10 times harder and more challenging, and you're working with people who are all in the same boat with you, and you're all, you know, helping each other, than a place where, you know, that just isn't happening.
One of my favorite quotes by Friedrich Nietzsche, and here it is. His disciple cried impetuously, "But I believe in your cause, and I consider it so strong that I shall say everything that I still have in my mind against it." The innovator laughed in his heart and wagged his finger at him. "This kind of discipleship," he said, "is the best." It reminds me of a lot of things. Number one, we're in a position when we pick mentors. It's weird. It's upside down. Like, how can you pick a mentor? You don't know what you need.
Right.
Right? I mean, you're hoping, you're going maybe on instinct. It's kind of like, you know, Luke Skywalker throwing the instrumentation away to go to the Death Star, going on the, you know, the instincts. But I think what, you know, looking back at it, what really works for me is I want to become my own mentor. And that's really kind of impossible. But it's not impossible to make sure you keep alive skepticism and challenging your own ideas, but not so much that you get locked down
sure.
and you're afraid to do anything. So you want to be not blithely, you know, dancing into danger, but you don't want to be so afraid that you're, you know,
paralyzed.
You're afraid to leave your bed,
right?
You know, because everything might go wrong. But there's got to be some balance to this. And I think back to my mentors. I'm thinking way back. This is way before law. You know, my mom used to ask me real simple questions, the kind where, you know, John, we talk about philosophy every so once in a while, like, what is time? And I forget the philosopher who said this. Everybody knows what it is until you start thinking about it. And then you're befuddled. You don't know what to say about
yeah,
it. Right. And, you know, I don't know what time it is.
Yeah,
you know, but
right.
we know what time it is when we look at our watch. But she would do that, I would say, to me or with me. And that got me thinking. That put me on a track. Mm-hmm. And my dad was much more, you know, he had more vocabulary and more, you know, more assurance and confidence. But my mom was sitting there asking simple questions.
Asking the right questions.
And that got me going. And I think that's one thing that I noticed about good mentors. When you first encounter them, it's kind of like, I don't know about this. They're telling me things I'm not comfortable with. I've never heard this before. And that's the only way I think you grow, is you get challenged and then you grow. But these mentors that I've met over the years, including people from all walks of life, I think they're all around us to some extent. There's, you know, small M and big M mentors. But if I subtracted the top 20, if I had to just say who are the people I think were the most important to me, if I took the top 20 people out of my life, I'd be uninteresting. It would destroy who I am not to have those people.
Right.
It is so important to have those people. And I know, John, we talked often. You know, I compliment you, and you hate being complimented, and, you know, but you've been a mentor to me, too. And I know that you say you get these ideas from other people, too, and we're all part of this
sure.
big,
yeah. Yeah.
convoluted, you know, world where we pick things up that we find useful and challenging and useful. And then it becomes, if it's really good, if you got a really good mentor and you don't see it, it's a reciprocal relationship. You're
right.
not seeing that other person is picking. I'm sure I've influenced you back the other way,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
But you don't see that. You're just thinking, I'm just getting from my mentors. And it's when it's at its best, it's a reciprocal, vibrant relationship.
It's fascinating hearing you talk about how you want a mentor who challenges you in the right ways. I think some of the best feedback I've ever gotten from one of my mentors is when I'm approaching a topic and saying, you know, I've got this and this and this going on, and I'm nervous. A classic example is you're going to an attorney who has years and years on you, and you go and ask a question, and all you're thinking about is what if I do this and then this goes wrong, or then I'm worried about this. And sometimes the best feedback that I get from one of my mentors is, so what? Take the risk, do the thing, move forward, make a decision, and so what? Just go forth, make your decision and go with it. And I think that that's not someone telling me exactly what to do. It's someone putting it back on me to say, you got this, make the decision. I hear all that stuff you're worried about. Whatever, just go make your decision. Just do something and make it and stop stirring in this space. And I think oftentimes I picture what a mentor can really do for you is if you're climbing up a staircase, so to speak, and you're at the landing and you don't know whether or not what your next move is going to be, at least your mentor can get you to pick up your foot to go to the next step, right? And I think that's such a significant piece of what it means to me to have a mentor is you don't have to stay stuck. You don't have to stay stuck for too long because a mentor is going to help you make a move one way or another. And if it's someone that you can trust, you know, just, and it's the same voice that's telling you, you will make mistakes. So you go to your mentor to say, I've got all these worries and concerns. And they're like, got it. You will make mistakes. So what are we doing? Just go ahead and make a decision and move forward. And sometimes it's challenging, but it's the best feedback. And you don't get that unless you're in that sort of reciprocal relationship with someone.
You've reminded me of that quote, 90% of life is being there.
Right.
It's like you got to show up or you miss out. Like the whole thing just goes on by.
How these relationships are started. And obviously there are some that, you know, your parents, I mean, you're born, you have parents and you're one of your parents, your mother, your father might be a mentor. But I'm thinking about the workplace mentors. And I'm thinking back on some of the, you know, wonderful people who I've worked with who've, you know, helped me develop and become who I am and taught me how to practice law and how I first met them and what drew me to them. You know, George Fitzsimmons, who's here, he's of counsel. He was one of my first mentors in the law practice. And I was a 4-year lawyer, changed firms, went to work for George at a firm with 12 lawyers. We did plaintiff stuff, a lot of trial stuff. I stayed there for 10 years working with George. And the first time that I met him or really talked to him about anything, you know, work-wise, we had, obviously, as a new lawyer, all of the, you know, the cases nobody wanted found their way to my desk.
Of course.
And I've got all these wonderful files that I'm digging through, and I'm going, what, you know?
Yeah.
And one of them...
I know how that
was,
goes.
Yeah, one of them literally was a case, and it was like 8 years old, this case. I think I was in high school or something when when the incident happened. And so I decided... I looked at the file and it looked like nobody had contacted the client in some point, you know, in some time. So I started going through the files, you know, introducing myself. And I noticed that I was like the 8th lawyer over the last 5 years that worked on a case.
Uh-oh.
And so I called this client who was out of town, and he just was like, went off on me about the time and how much time and all of this stuff. And it had been like, it was 8 years, you know, since the incident. And so after I got done talking to him and taking notes, look at the file, I walked down to George's office and talked about it. And I said, George, you know, this poor guy, you know, he's been 8 years and this and that. And George said, why is he so impatient? And so, of course, George was joking and we both started laughing. Right. And, you know, I was like real serious. It's, you know, we got to do this and that. And the case had all kinds of issues and problems with it. That's why it had been around so long. But the thing that drew me to him was he never took himself or anything else too seriously. You know, you'd get all worked up about something and he'd go, well, okay, you know, I talked to him about, I got this case and they made this offer and, you know, here's what the client thinks and that, and here was our demand and here's some of the issues in the case and it's ready to go to trial. And I'd say, you know, what should we do? Should we, you know, do we accept the settlement? Do we lower our offer? Do we, whatever? And George's answer was always the same. Always. He'd say, is it a good case? And I'd go, yeah. Do you like your client? You got a good client. George would say, well, I think I'd get their permission and just go ahead and try it. And that was like over and over and over again. And I tried the first 12 months I was there, I think I tried 10 cases, 2 verdicts, civil cases. And I had tried one or been involved in one in the 4.5 years before that. And I wasn't, I won. I had one where I was, you know, the actual trial lawyer. And, you know, George, it continued. Our offices were next to each other, which was great for me, maybe not so much for George,
sure, because
I was running in there all the time. And
talk about when we move offices, right. Guess whose office I picked to be next to.
Next to.
Is there a hole in the wall?
Yeah. So you can just not yell yet.
But so one of the things George loved to do is he would try to settle a case, and if the case didn't settle, and they were usually smaller, like auto cases or a slip and fall case, and this happened at least once a month, I would have a file sitting on my desk with a yellow Post-it on it, and all it would say is, Monday, Division 16.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was set for trial, and I'd usually get it on a Wednesday, sometimes a Thursday, sometimes a Friday, and I would look at the file, and it would be like 2 inches thick, and it would be some auto, you know, accident. And I would find myself sitting in the office in the conference room meeting a client for the first time, you know, and here's, I'm your lawyer. And we're, but that, you know, I tried, you know, God knows how many cases I tried because of that, you know, that way where it was just on my desk. And, you know, I had stuff and going on, and all of a sudden I'm trying, you know, trying this case and meeting the client. And it was just fabulous. I mean, it was just terrific. And it was just what I needed. I needed to get in there and get cases. And obviously George knew that. But every time, he used to say, so tell me this, if you got a good case and a good client, he'd say, who do you think is going to pay more money, an insurance adjuster whose job it is not to pay you?
Ever.
Or 12 jurors, yeah. You know, in the city of St. Louis?
Right.
And again, I'd be kind of laughing about it and nodding, and he'd say, just go try the case. And it was getting over that, you know, I have to win, or I have to, you don't have to do anything. Just give it your best and go try the case and, you know, get your client's consent and permission and go try it.
That is the prototypical mentor. I think they're everywhere, and they might, you might see them as an adversary. In fact, it might be your opponent in a case who says something and you go, that's a lesson. That's something I needed to hear. Maybe you were wrong about something and you benefit from somebody just being honest with you. I remember I was in a trial where the topic was an insurance policy, and it was drudgery. We're chewing through the clauses and what they meant, and at a break the judge said, Eric, you're putting them to sleep. And I'm thinking, that's right. I need to get better. I need to condense this thing. That was a lesson.
Thank you.
Right.
Right. Well,
who was it? The judge told you that?
Yeah.
In a nice way? That's good.
Yeah. During the break. Yeah. You're putting them to sleep.
Could have been worse.
It is kind of interesting to think about mentorship in all different forms. One of the first cases that I worked on, it was an attorney who I probably was closer in age to his grandchildren than him. And the different type of intimidation tactics that he would use with me. And gosh, it was tough having that to be one of my first cases. And I remember going to my dad saying, gosh, this guy, he just is saying this, and, you know, telling me to get coffee during depositions. Oh. And I mean, it was kind of jarring to me. I wasn't expecting it. And my dad, without even batting an eye, he just said, you are going to learn so much from this experience. And I was like, well, that was interesting. Not the feedback I was expecting to get, but he was just kind of like, go get back in the deposition, get back in the case. You're going to learn so much from him and from this interaction that
not necessarily even, the good thing. You're going to learn.
Exactly.
It's not going to be a good experience, but you will learn.
Yes. And it'll make you a better lawyer because of it. And I remember at the end of the case, shaking the guy's hand and saying, I have learned so much working with you. Thank you so much. And I did it and wished him well. And sometimes I run into him every now and again and always ask how he's doing. But I will never forget the lessons I learned. And I wouldn't have even had the opportunity to do that if I had a mentor who pulled me out and went in to fix, you know. Instead, it was just like, yep, you can say that stuff in my office and then go get back at it. And I promise, even if you can't see it now, you're going to learn a significant amount.
One of the things that George also like drilled into my head very early on was, you know, it's the whole idea of trying to be professional, just like
civil.
You were saying, civil to people and not fighting about things that you don't need to fight about. And George's, you know, reason for that was a lot more practical. And he said, John, why would you give somebody who bills by the hour extra motivation? You know, I didn't argue
Amen.
With you. And I thought, wow, you know, that's a good point, you know. And that is really, it is. It's, you know, getting along with people. He used to always tell me, keep it simple. You know, speaking of keeping it simple, I'll always remember this. One of the first cases that I worked on with George, it was in federal court, and there was a pretrial due, and I was literally at the firm for a month, and he hands me this file, and it was a big commercial case, and George said, here, you know, the pretrial's due, and go ahead and prepare it. And I gave it to him to, you know, I prepared it. I filed all, you know, I was trying to talk to him about it, and he kind of just forced me to do it all on my own. And so I drafted about 20 or 25 motions in limine. I responded to all the defendant's motions, and I got no feedback. He just signed it and filed it, you know, read it, signed it, and filed it. So we show up at the pretrial, and we're in federal court. And I was, you know, kind of proud of all this wonderful work I had done and put all these motions together. And the judge asked George, does the plaintiff have any motions? And of course, we had 26 or 25 or whatever. I drafted them and filed them. And George says, no, Your Honor. No. So anyway.
Your stomach drops. Right.
And then we start going through the defense motions. And we're on number 8. And every one of them, George is saying, Judge, we don't have a problem with that. Yeah, we got no issue with that. We got no issue with that. And, you know, we're moving right along. Then we get to number 9, and he says, now, Your Honor, we have a big problem with this one. And, of course, we won that one, and that was the only motion that was really dispositive or a real, you know, issue for us. But I just learned not only did he keep it simple, you know, the judge was very happy with us because we were so accommodating. And by waiting, you know, by agreeing to all these other motions, it just emphasized that, holy cow, this one must really be wrong, you know, be a bad motion. It was just a great, you know, great example.
That was show, don't tell. Because when I think of a mentor, I think of somebody telling somebody younger, here's what you need to do, and here's some rules, and here's what to avoid. But there's so much of mentoring and about relationships that's not verbal. It's about showing someone, like, it was probably shocking to you to hear him say, we don't have any motions to present, but the lesson stuck.
Vivid. I have so many, you know, memorable, positive stories, you know, great stories with George. And one, you know, another one that comes to mind was I was in trial, and I had to take an expert's deposition in another case. And that case, you know, I couldn't continue it. I needed to have somebody go in and take it. And so it was a videotaped deposition. They were taking it for trial. And I remember George it was videotape. You know, where you take the actual video and carry it, the big tape, and carry it back to the office. And so, of course, I come back from trial. And there's this videotape sitting on my desk with a Post-it on it. And it says, watch this. And that's all it said. And it had to do with a case where our client was having surgery and his blood pressure spiked, and he ended up having a stroke and just horrible, terrible result. And so I, you know, after my trial was over a few days later, I pop it in and I'm sitting there with a cup of coffee watching it. And it was, you know, had I taken that deposition and I was prepared to take it, it would have been an hour and a half, an hour long, you know, cross-examination. And George's was about 12 minutes. It was about a 12-minute deposition. And what he did is he pulled one of the doctor's books, because he was in a conference room waiting for the doctor, and the other lawyer was back in the doctor's office prepping him for the deposition, and George was looking at the doctor's books and found one of the books, and it was on stroke and rising blood pressure or whatever. And so George pulls the book off the shelf during the cross-examination, asked the doctor to pull the book off the shelf and turn to chapter 3, page whatever. And it basically said, you know, these are the signs of stroke, and when this happens, you need to do this. And then there was another section about how our client was not a candidate, you know, for having, he wasn't a candidate for stroke. It was something that they did with the medication or whatever that, you know, made it spike. And then finally, right after that, he says, he's talking to him about the actual chart from the medical record. And it's got numbers on it where they chart minute by minute, you know, the blood pressure. And it got so high, they couldn't chart it there, so they write the numbers in up top. And George goes, so doctor, why did they quit writing the numbers there? Why, or what are those numbers? You know, what? It's because it wasn't the chart end. And he goes, I see. You mean the blood pressure, that's what they mean when they say it's off the chart, you know, the blood pressure. But it was a 12-minute, 15-minute deposition, very short, extremely effective. And I'm sitting there just smiling watching it. And I'm so glad that I didn't have the opportunity to take that, that deposition.
Right.
So, but anyway, another good lesson learned. You know, simpler is better.
And I also think for any attorney who has a mentor within their office, it's just as significant to have one outside of your own office. You know, I think that it's fantastic when you can build relationships with attorneys who are, if you see somebody who's doing something or moving forward in their career in a way that you think is admirable, just go get a cup of coffee with them and talk to them. It can be someone you run into in the courthouse and just catch up with them. You know, one thing that's hilarious is that I think lawyers are of a profession that we always want to talk about what we do for a living. I mean, let's be real here. There's no one who is going to say no if you just want to go meet up with them and talk to them about their practice and what they do for a living. I teach trial advocacy at St. Louis University, and I always tell my students, if you want to ever grab a cup of coffee or if there's a particular type of law that you want to do, ask me and I will make sure that you get connected with somebody. And it's rare that they actually follow up and do that, but it has such an immense impact for the students who choose to do it. Building those relationships is so key to, you know, getting that sort of mentorship.
That wraps up part one of our discussion on mentorship. We'll be back with part two next time. This has been another episode of The Jury Is Out. I'm Eric Veith.
I'm Mary Simon.
I'm John Simon, and we'll see you next time.
The Jury Is Out is brought to you by the Simon Law Firm. At the Simon Law Firm PC, we believe in the power of pooling resources in order to create powerful results. We often lend our trial skills and experience to lawyers around the country to achieve better results for their clients. Our attorneys welcome the opportunity to work with you on your case, offering vast resources, seasoned litigators, and a sterling reputation. You can contact us at 314-241-2929. And if you enjoyed the podcast, feel free to share your thoughts with John, Tim, and Eric at comments@thejuryisout.law. And subscribe today, because the best lawyers never stop learning.